Live from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, downtown in the heart of the Byward Market. Welcome to Sunday Night. Here's Rabbi Balka.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our program. I'm delighted that you are with us, and we have a full program a little bit dealing with my, shall we say, forgetfulness. I had a wonderful guest lined up, forgot totally about it, and then I had another program lined up, forgot about the first guest. Anyway, we're going to have a double-pronged program today. Everyone has been so kind and generous and forgiving. I guess they figure I'm an old guy that I'm allowed to forget. What I'm not forgetting, though, we begin with a quote, a Canadian quote, Robertson Davies. I just am a Canadian. It is not a thing that you can escape from. It is like having blue eyes. By the way, he wrote that before people are actually able today to change the color of their eyes. But we won't get into that. But we'll get right into our first guest. He has a very uplifting and I'd say wonderful. It's a triumphal story. Chris Nyme with us in studio. Chris, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And we made a deal since I mucked up that you're going to come back.
I would love to make another visit.
Right. Well, don't say it so fast. You may not enjoy it, but I'm sure we're going to enjoy it. So, I have it in my hands, folks, a book. It's this is not a flimsy book. This book is almost 400 pages. And it's the book is called Two Sides to the Story, Living a Lie, A Battle with Mental Illness. And Chris is not only my guest tonight, but he's the author of the book. And this is almost like is like a first-person autobiography.
Yes, yes, it is. I wrote it straight from the heart. I mean, it's a book that's so raw and authentic in its story that it really places the reader in the story to get a you know a feel and a sense of what you know they can't know exactly what it was like unless you go through it, but to have a feeling of you know the ups, the downs, the obsessions, the anxiety. I've written it in a way that people can appreciate it
looks
and
like
understand
a very,
it.
Looks like a very readable book.
It creates more understanding of the disorders, for sure.
So, published, it says here, Chipmunk Publishing.
Yes.
Is that yours?
It's actually not. no. When my book was ready, you'll probably notice that I have a few endorsers on the back, and one is Elizabeth Manley,
right? Yeah,
who great is an incredible lady. Yeah. She's been a wonderful support. I've met her, we've chatted, and I sent it to her and a few others before sending it to a publisher, and I found a publisher in the UK. So they're in London, England. So they're called Chipmunk Publishing. He's a mental health publisher. I thought I'll go for a mental health publisher. It'd probably be my best. Right. Bet, because I'll get a lot of support with them. I found him. His name is Jason Pagler. He's an incredible man. His company houses approximately 800 authors now. So it's a very big company with mental health, one of the biggest in the world.
So he went over there to England.
In the UK, yeah. And right. And he, it's amazing. He's such a wonderful support. I email, within an hour, I'm getting an email back. They've backed me up on so many things.
But with email, you have no excuse that it takes 3 days by mail to go over the ocean. Or
exactly. Exactly. We don't have that distance with email. Right. So, no, he's wonderful, and you can see that he produces a beautiful book. The quality is amazing, and I'm going on to my third book with them now.
This
was my first with them. I have a second titled Sally.
Which is, that's not come out yet.
No, it's out. It's actually out? An illustrated picture book on the homeless.
So you're bitten by the bug.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Writing has changed my life.
Right. Once you start writing, it's hard. As long as the pen has some ink in it.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, no, I had Sally came out in 2015, and I have a new book coming out at Christmas time.
Is it a mental health book?
It is. It's called Reflections from Another Side, and it's an anthology of works. I'm just so excited about it. I can't wait for it.
And that's the same guy in England?
Same publisher,
well, yeah. I like English publishers because I was born there, so
well, there you go.
So let me read to you what Elizabeth, to you means you know, but our audience. Elizabeth Manley, who, by the way, if I told you that she won a gold medal in the 1988 Olympics, and of course you're going to correct me and say no, she only won a silver medal, but What she did was she turned that silver into gold. So I consider that she won a gold medal because
I agree.
She became such a powerful voice for mental health issues. So this is what she writes about the book. This book, from front to back, is capturing and a true doorway to the stigma of mental health. It gives hope to all who suffer. A must on your table. Can't get any better than that.
That comment, it just moved me. It's such a powerful thing to say, and it really captures what my book is all about.
As they say, right. And you're one of the few, most of the books when I hold it, they have price in U.S. dollars and Canadian dollars, and you got it in U.K. pounds and in Canadian.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised at the differential. So in Canadian, it's 28, and in UK, it's 15 pounds.
Yes.
Has the pound gotten so
Yeah,
much?
I don't know all the math behind it, but it sells worldwide, which is a great thing. It sells on Amazon. It sells on Indigo. It sells on Barnes & Noble in the States. That's why I was so happy to find a publisher, because they have so many connections with stores all around the world. So it's selling everywhere online.
So I love some of the quotes you have in here. So by the way, folks, I just got the book now. I stole it from Chris as he was coming in.
And he gets to keep the copy.
Because I stole it already. Anyway, it says, Thomas Edison, our greatest weakness lies in giving up. The most certain way to succeed is always to try just one more time. In other words, it's basically like saying, you keep on going until you succeed.
Yes.
And if you don't succeed, that's only no excuses.
There's no, it's, you know, and I have a quote from Booker T. Washington in there too. And it's about the greatest things we achieve in life are not all the things we gain, the jobs, the house, it's the things we overcome, the challenges we overcome in our life that make us who we are.
So I have another one too. I've always had trouble, you know, with the way that we use silly words, like you ever hear a sportscaster? He writes about a guy who's lining up a putt on the green, and he gives it a good whack, and he said, "Why? Well, that was a courageous putt." Hold on a minute. Courage with putts doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
No.
So anyway, you got a quote here that caught my eye. It's like this. It's the author unknown. But it writes like this: Superman's not brave. You can't be brave if you're indestructible. This is coming right as the machine.
Yeah, it came through Ottawa.
It came to Ottawa. It's everyday people like you and me who are brave, knowing we could easily be defeated, but still continue forward. Wonderful quote.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, very powerful. And it's right.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, so, it's one I chose because it really indicates what we go through in life to stand strong and overcome the things
right.
that we're
and the real courage is in not being oblivious to the surroundings, but to know what it is that's out there and to deal with it.
Yeah, and it's a strength and a courage that comes from within, you know, where you're pulling that out of yourself to make changes in your life and make a difference in other people's lives.
So we've been skirting around beating around the bush a little bit, folks. When we come back, we have one more segment with Chris, and we're going to find out a little bit of his story. I'm not going to tell you all of it tonight, neither is he, because we want him back to do the whole enchilada. But we'll be back with Chris Nyme right after these messages.
Now back to Sunday Night with Rabbi Bolka on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our program. Our special guest in studio, Chris Nyme, author of Two Sides to the Story, Living a Lie, A Battle with Mental Illness. It's basically his story. So we're going to sort of get into his story through a little bit of a convoluted route, which is a new development that has taken place, relatively new, regarding yourself and the Canadian battle on the mental illness front.
Yes, about 3 weeks ago, it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was in Toronto. Me and four other mental health advocates who have been working over the years to try and get our message out, share our story.
Right.
were selected to be ambassadors for the Canadian Alliance of Mental Illness and Mental Health. And they've termed us Faces of Mental Health. So we're part of a year campaign now. We've had the honor and the privilege to be able to go out and spread our message of hope and healing to people that are struggling and suffering everywhere. It began in Toronto where we did photo shoots. We did a PSA, which will be coming on throughout October's Mental Illness Awareness Week here in Ottawa. And we did interviews with that. In October, when we do have that week, the five of us will be going to the Parliament to speak with senators and MPs about trying to balance the funding between physical and mental illnesses. Because ultimately, a mental illness is a physical illness. It's the brain.
Well, sure.
And so we're trying to balance the funds, and we're going to be speaking to them. And the whole thing culminates in January with Bell Let's Talk. And in fact, the whole head sponsor or lady that, you know, started the whole Bell Let's Talk, she is a big part of what we're doing, and she will be actively helping us push our message through.
You're not talking about Clara Hughes?
No, no, not Clara Hughes.
There's a spokesperson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just with Bell Let's Talk, we will be dealing with many people. I'm hoping Clara Hughes, I'm hoping Howie Mandel. But we actually were introduced by Michael Landsberg when we were in Toronto at the conference, which was really, really neat.
I think people are continually stunned. I think maybe in some people's minds, they think that once you have it, you're stuck with it for life. But if you frame it in the terms of it's one of the many illnesses that we have, and there are people around who get cured and live great lives. Like, look at yourself. You're turned it around to 360 degrees.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. The best way I can describe it is, you know, I know it's cliche, but it's night and day compared to where I was. In 2001, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and literally it ripped my life apart. When I heard the diagnosis, it was like a punch in the face. I thought my life was over. Any of my future visions for a house, for a relationship, for kids, for anything, just fell to the wayside. And I ended up that summer in 2001 in my parents' basement for over 2 months in a deep, deep, deep depression. I had come from what is called mania.
I was diagnosed bipolar
disorder, and the mania lasted a few months until that summer. And I swear, life was over at that time.
Let me go back to that just to ask you what may seem like a silly question. When they told us, did they tell it directly to you that you have a bipolar?
Yes.
Did they combine that with some sort of assurances that we have the wherewithal, the medication, and the treatment to get you over it?
When I met my doctor, I actually met him in April when I was on my high,
right,
where I was feeling great and things were wonderful. And I remember looking at him, and he was telling me, you know, Chris, I'm worried about you. This is, you know, sounds like bipolar disorder. You know, things have to change. Here's some medication. And all I did was roll my eyes because I felt so good, and there was no way I was going to listen.
Like that. Yeah.
I'm not going to believe it
right.
If I feel this good. When I, 2 months later, you know, into June, and I start to drop dramatically, and in July, I have to face that doctor again at the Civic Emergency, and I look at his eyes, and I can't even look. I just want to put my head down. And he says, you know, Chris, this disorder, you can live with this disorder. It's a lot of hard work, but you can live a normal life. At that time, it just went right over my head.
You didn't want to believe it. Yeah.
I didn't. And I felt so low and so depressed and so down that the only place that I was going to get any salvation at that time was my parents' basement. I had to go to the dark, and for over 2 months, I stayed in that basement. And it was awful. It was the worst time of my life.
There was nothing that they're able to do to you at that point in time to lift you out of it, no medication or anything?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was at that time, actually, that when I met the doctor in July, he gave me lithium. And lithium is a medication for bipolar. Lithium, I say this to everyone, medication is a must. It's so important. It's necessary. It has to be there. But more important is what you as a sufferer do to improve your life. Medication, doctor, support, they all have to be there. But what I found as I started to heal was that it was up to the things that I did, that I was the key to taking my life further. I was the key to make my life matter.
Yeah, but the key, interesting. But a lot of times I've unfortunately encountered it in my life. I guess the question is, how do you get people to think that way? I mean, even the fact that you were able to do so is a blessing.
Well, it didn't start like that.
Right, because you have so many people around who basically say, cognitively they say, I know that,
yeah.
But somehow or other they can't get, it's almost like they're in a straitjacket and they can't get out.
I agree. And, you know, like you said, this didn't come on right away. I needed the medication. I needed the family. My family, I can't even use the words to describe family, my mom, my dad, my sister jumped in. They were there constantly, even when I was yelling at them to get away and I didn't want to be near them and I wanted to be alone. They were always there. I always had people with me, and that's one of the messages I always try to stress. You're not alone. And I tell people, anyone out there, I don't care if you're by yourself. I'm here. If you hear my message, write me. Write me through my email. Reach me somehow. You'll never be alone because there'll be two of us there. And I always want people to know that I'm there for them.
People don't realize how important that is. It seems like it's a cliche or anything like that. But for many people, some of the triggers, just to know that there's somebody out there that cares for you can be a tremendous changer for them, because they probably feel, what's the difference? Most people who take the drastic step of saying goodbye to this world, in the back of their minds are saying, nobody's going to notice, nobody's going to care, so what's the difference does it make, so why go on?
Well, I know, and I'll tell you right now, if I didn't have my family in that basement,
right,
I either would have been on the streets or I wouldn't be here. And it's so true what you say. That's why my message is one of hope, because I found a way to get my life back on track. I had to have those many things surrounding me. Once I had the support, the medication, the doctor, my family, I was able to look at myself and say, now I have these things in play. What can I do to better my life through building my faith, through volunteer work, through exercise, through eating well? There was a multitude of things I did. And in fact, I want to write another book on just healing, because I think it's so important that people know they're...
got the bug. Yeah, the bug. Once you start writing, it's hard to stop.
It is. And I just want to give people the assurance that mental illness is not a death sentence. Mental illness is actually, in my life, a stepping stone to amazing and wonderful things that I'm doing right now that I couldn't have been doing.
Absolutely. You wouldn't have been. Now, just a question. How did people get the book?
So my book currently sells at Chapter Stores in Ottawa.
Good, yeah.
But it's also on indigo.ca, amazon.ca, and you can purchase it also through my site.
Which is
chrisnimy.com.
It's spelled CHRISNIH, don't forget the H, NIHMEY
.com. Yeah,
chrisnimy.com.
There.
That's great. And I would imagine that this is the big trick for a London publisher is to have a good distribution network in Canada. I hope that he's going to be able to do that.
Oh, for sure. Actually, the one that's linked with my illustrated children's book that came out in 2015 is with FitzHenry and Whiteside.
Oh, yeah, those are right.
So yeah, that's their distributor.
That's North American enough, right.
Yeah.
The book has wonderful quotes in there, and they stick out because they're nice, good, bold stuff, right? So what do you have here? One from Booker T. Washington, unfortunately an American, but you know,
which is the one I emphasize. Yeah, you can read it exactly.
It goes like this: success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed.
It's so true. You can gain everything in life, but what matters most is what you've achieved within yourself and the person you've become.
Chris Nyme, a Canadian hero, thank you so much for joining us, but we're getting you back.
For sure.
A deal. And people I've heard on radio, you can't weasel out of it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
The 10:30 news coming up, folks. We'll see you right after with some interesting guests. New ones.
Now back to Sunday Night with Rabbi Bolka on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Following the 10:30 news, a great guest in the first half, Chris Nyme, and we have in the second half two guests in studio. One's a producer, one's a director. They're both great guys, and they're in here because of an event that's taking place as we speak here in Ottawa. So let me introduce you to the director, is Attila Clemen. Welcome.
Hello. Hello, Rabbi.
The first time you've been on our show.
Yes.
James Richardson, director, you've been on quite often.
But a few, and it's always a good time.
It's always
so
fun.
Thank you.
It's always fun. Thank you guys for coming tonight. I understand that the show that we're going to be talking about has already had, it was on tonight.
Yeah, it's been happening now. It opened on July 20th, so it's been going since then, every Tuesday to Sunday nights, and it just finished about probably 5-10 minutes ago.
It's about 2.5 hours.
But two hours and 20 minutes, something like that, yeah.
And you, how much dread do you have about rain?
Well, actually, I sort of live a bit fearlessly. I like to just go down to the park no matter what and not have to anticipate anything.
Unlike baseball.
If it rains, it rains. It doesn't bother us, it's more like
a baseball game or a football game, because baseball, they call them, and football, they play them no matter what.
No, it's definitely a baseball game.
It's a baseball game.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if there's a little bit of light rain, we'll still perform, and we usually do, or they'll rehearse when they're rehearsing outside. But if it starts to get dangerous for the actors,
there's
no coverage for the audience, so they don't, you know, I mean, they can pull out their umbrellas, but at a certain point, you know, you don't want to be sitting in the rain. I can buy that. But so far, we've been doing pretty well.
Right, you're probably the only group that's gotten away from the rain this summer.
By the skin of our teeth. It seems like since opening, we've only had to delay the show a little bit, but otherwise the shows have all run, so that's great.
That's great, really. Yeah.
I would say the rehearsal period got rained out quite a bit.
Yeah. I remember when I was there for the one that you had about Servant of Many Masters.
Servant of Two Masters, yes.
Which was a panic of a play. But one of the it did rain.
Yeah,
they went on with it, but there was this real fear that the actors were going to slip.
Yeah,
because they didn't have coverage there.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But they were courageous. They said no.
They were courageous. Well, no, we were so close to the end that night. I think it was. Yeah. And it's hard, you know.
You remember?
Oh, I was there.
I know you were there, but you remember every single.
That was a pretty memorable moment. I think we were 15 minutes from the end of the show, and it just all of a sudden started to rain, and it was like, okay, we got to get through this somehow. So we did.
Right.
Yeah.
So just for the record, what's the difference between a producer and a director? Who wants to go?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, there's the simple answer, and there's probably the more complex answer. I mean, the easy answer would be the director is the one who actually is in and creates the show, has the vision for what the show is going to be like, what it's going to look like, who the actors are going to be, and creates all of that and takes care of the artistic stuff. And the producer is essentially the one who signs the checks. I mean, on a basic level, it's not my money, but I'm the one, you know, and that's essentially the person. So I ensure that, you know, contracts are done and, you know, government filings are done and that the actors get their paychecks and that the space is there, you know, the space is booked. And that the garbages are all cleaned.
All the logistics. The director doesn't have to worry about all of that stuff.
They shouldn't have to. Sometimes they end up doing it.
So a good producer takes away a director's anxiety about things like, will we have enough money to run the show?
Yeah,
and stuff
absolutely.
Like that,
I mean, a great producer like here at Odyssey just takes care of all the little bits and pieces that you wouldn't even think to have to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? making sure that actors have get the right housing or get their trains on time and that kind of thing.
All the logistics.
All the logistics, yeah, every little bit of
and
it.
And you're
the
one who says to you, let's say, for example, you have the rehearsals and you make sure that everybody has their lines right.
That's right. And then you know, they know where they're going. And
more
how
passion in what you say, you know. Right. Stuff like that, yeah. Right?
So we're, you know, I'm concerned about the all the artsy fartsy things that have to go on, and making sure that actors live up to the standard that Odyssey expects.
Are you a tough director?
Like, I don't think so. I can certainly get passionate about things, but I would say I come from an acting side, so I have performed several times with Odyssey and in Ottawa and elsewhere. So I know what the actor is kind of going through in their process, and I'm always a bit sensitive to where they are at that moment.
Have you ever had a director who was tough on you?
Not with me directly, no, but I've seen directors be pretty sharp.
And that can hurt the confidence. And
it hurts the whole group, you know. Yeah. And so I'm really sensitive about any kind of rough language or any kind of language that is demeaning. Yeah, it can really.
No Scaramucci tweets. No. Coming from you.
Absolutely not. Okay. It's too small a town, quite frankly. And right, as artists,
you never know. You may get angry. The neighbors will hear it.
That's right.
So. We're here because of Odyssey Theatre's production of The Amorous Servant.
That's right.
Right. So this is an outdoor thing.
Yes.
It's going on in Strathcona Park, which for people who don't know where it is, it's right around the corner from the Russian embassy.
It's just literally right at the bottom of the hill. They overlook us.
Right. So it's off a Laurier and...
It's at the corner of Laurier Avenue East and Range Road.
You got it.
Right in the...
The reason why I know is I used to live around there.
Yeah, far into Sandy Hill, just you know, right in the Strathcona Park. So it's just right down by the river.
Right. And it's the same place every year that you have
same
it.
Theater. It was for 32 years we've been playing on the same stage.
Unbelievable.
It is.
But you're not 32. Are you 32 years old already?
I'm a little bit older than that.
But you've been director for how many years now?
I've been working professionally in the theater probably for 16, 17 years now, I think. Something like 17 years, both as a director
and a
producer.
You believe that, Taylor?
Yeah, sure. Goes fast.
Yeah, time goes by fast.
Actually, my first show with Odyssey was actually James's first show with Odyssey as a technician.
He must have been a pitcher. 17 years ago, you were a director?
Yeah. I started my own theater company at that point.
Okay, so what was the play that you directed then?
The play was called The Importance of Being Earnest.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep. All right.
Yeah, so that was
I even heard of that one. So it's going to August 20th.
To August 20th, that's right.
So it starts around 8 o'clock at night?
Starts at 8 o'clock, except Sundays we also do a 2 o'clock show as well.
They have a matinee.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's a pay-what-you-can show. So
really?
For those that don't have a lot of money, it's a perfect opportunity to come.
This is unbelievable. No, really? Well, you're the director. You gotta. If you're gonna write the checks.
Yeah. Well, no, but I think there's. You know, I mean, there's. I mean, Odyssey's pretty. Their prices are pretty reasonable. They're some of the lowest in professional theater in terms of what we charge. But, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, $20 is that's a lot of money, and we'd rather not that be a hindrance
to be there.
Rather than be there. Yeah, so we try and give them that opportunity to be able to see
it. But for somebody listening and saying, okay, James, it's very nice of you, but I can afford it, so tell me how much it costs.
If you buy in advance, it's $25 or $21 for students and seniors.
Right.
And then it's a couple of dollars more if you buy it at the door. So that's...
How do they get a hold of it? Is there a website?
Yeah, they can go to odysseytheater.ca. They can also call me or an email.
So, boys, folks, odysseytheatre.ca is not so easy because you don't know how to spell the stuff. So Odyssey is spelled O-D-Y-S-S-E-Y, and theater is not spelled like the Americans.
No, that's actually it's the Canadian way.
Right, theatre .ca.
.ca.
And that's where you can get the tickets.
Yep, or you can call me at 613-232-8407.
613-232-8407. Yeah.
8407.
8407. So, you know, this is like an unorthodox director who actually gives out his home phone. That's pretty good. So, so far, are you satisfied with the way things are going, both as director and producer?
Yeah. I mean, you know, from my end, this is the first time I've had a chance to direct at Odyssey. And it's actually my first sort of. professional production directing. I've been doing a lot of smaller productions, and I've worked on a lot of creation theater where I'm like a co-director with the ensemble. But here's my first chance to do a full-on show, and I have to say that it's been really, really rewarding, and I felt quite at home, and I think that the actors were pleased with how the whole show
came together. You're not a player coach. In other words, you just do directing, but you're not in the play itself.
I'm not in the play, not in this one, no. Right. I have other jobs coming up. You do quite a lot of
acting yourself, yes, but not on this one.
Yeah, not
on this one. So I think I would have to say, like, I mean, having Attila as a director, he's been, I mean, you wouldn't know it was his first experience because it's been fantastic and it's made my job really easy. I haven't had to worry about a thing that's happened in rehearsal, so that's been a blessing for me.
It's on radio. We can't change his mind. No.
That's right, yeah, recorded, stamped.
Folks, we're talking to James Richardson and Attila Clemen, who are both producer and director of The Amorous Servant, Odyssey Theatre production, which is taking place as we speak. It started July 20th. It goes till August 20th. It's a long run, a whole month. And you can get your tickets by going to odysseytheatre.ca. You can call James at 613-232-8407. We're going to take a break now, final break, before we come back with our wonderful guests. Don't go away.
Now back to Sunday Night with Rabbi Bolka on News Talk Radio 580 CFRA.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are in studio with a producer and a director. I'm putting on my best voice. I'm auditioning. So we have with us James Richardson, who's been with us on a number of occasions, and first-timer here. You're doing well for a first-timer.
Thank you.
This is your first time on radio, first-time director. Pretty good. Attila Clemen, what's the greatest anxiety you have as a director?
Well, my biggest concern is always the audience. So, when we're putting on a show, I'm quite simplistic in the way I direct. I want every minute to either provoke an idea, a very specific idea, make someone laugh or make someone cry. And if it's not doing one of those things, then we're missing the boat. So in every moment, we're looking for a piece of the story, a piece of a joke, a piece of something that's that requires some empathy from the audience. So my biggest worry is always, what is the audience thinking or feeling right now at any moment?
That's pretty good, because I thought your biggest fear would be that your star will call up 10 minutes before and say, I just got a terrible flu and I lost my voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear of that's probably more James's fear, because he's the one that would have to deal with that more than me, you know.
Now, do you have backups for all of the parts?
Not really.
No, we don't. I mean, we've had a situation a few years ago where one of the actresses actually sprained her foot on stage, finished the show that night, but then she couldn't perform, and we basically had to take, I think we canceled two shows, and then brought in somebody from Toronto who had I don't know if she auditioned for the part or something, but she knew the part well enough to come in and sort of take a day to rehearse,
Attila, you could probably take over one or two.
Yeah, that would be an option. That has happened before, not to me, but that has happened where directors or people.
So we've danced around the actual place called The Amorous Servant. Can you tell us a little bit about it? Not too much, because you want them to come, right?
Well, without giving away too much, the story hinges around a family that there's an older gentleman, Ottavio. This is all set in Verona in the 18th century. And he has a second wife, a young wife, who's actually really eager to get him to do his will so that she can have everything when he passes on.
Right, so the first wife had died?
First wife is gone, and the second wife is there with her son, all the lineage in line to get the will. In the meantime, she's kicked out his son out of the house, and along with his son has gone the son's servant. She is the loyalist, most humble servant who does everything for her master. And in the end, she has to manipulate everything to make sure that the her master gets the proper woman that is for him, and that that the will doesn't get made and signed off to the
And additionally, to make things even more complicated, apparently she has strong feelings for his evicted son.
Well, this is always a question, right? Does she feel strongly about him or not? Or what is her? Everyone has suspicions about her because she's living kind of in sin with her master. They're on their own. It's not a really proper arrangement there. So, yes, there's lots of suspicions around.
Right. Yeah. And apparently this is a comedy.
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, sounds like some serious stuff to it, too.
Well,
yeah,
there's a bit of heart to it, for sure. I always want the characters to show what's kind of really going on behind them. But, yeah, ultimately it is a comedy. It has sort of the... historically, it has a bit of a French farce feel to it. We have a couple of doors, you know, slamming and shutting, and people jumping in and out, that kind of thing. So it has a French farce feel to it.
So Carlos Goldoni, he's the guy that did the other one that I was at.
The Servant of Two Masters. Yeah. He's probably the best known of sort of the Italian playwrights in the style of Commedia dell'arte.
You've made him famous here.
I don't know if I've made him famous, but I think Odyssey certainly made him famous.
They've done
a few of his, almost all of his plays now, I think, or all of his known ones anyways, over the years.
And this one is a lesser known of his, because it has only been recently translated into English. So
could you go on the road with this, like take it from here and do it in another city, or
not with the set we have?
No,
I mean, you know, you can adapt anything, I guess, or if you know we. You know, if you had a big budget, we could definitely, you know, like take it all down piece by piece and pack it and put it in a tractor trailer truck. But no, I mean, I don't think as a sort of a local independent company, I don't think we could. We'd love to be able to do it, but right now we couldn't.
Did you ever have the desire to film the whole thing and then sell the movie rights?
You know, you could, but it's funny. Yeah, I mean, sure, that'd be great. But I think I don't know how many times I tried to film theater, and it never really reads the same way when you put it on a screen. Like you lose.
But
something.
They've tried that with the Met Opera.
Yeah. Well, the Met Opera seems they somehow. I mean, I think they've got something like about 20 cameras operating on that.
Oh yeah.
But like I've seen plays. I know it was a TV station a number of years ago that used to sometimes put plays from, you know, Stratford or something on stage, and it's just it's flat. It's completely flat, and you lose it because the theater's not. Theater's
it's not, like it'd be right in it.
Yeah.
Do you have the director bug now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So no more acting? Or?
Well, no. I mean, I love the acting, and acting is a good way to train, too, because I'm watching the director, you know, for my hints and lessons side by side. So.
Well, so if you're going to be an actor now, you've already been the director, so it's going to be hard to direct you now because...
Oh, yeah, that's probably true. I hope. I try to keep my mouth shut when I'm
okay, told you're the director.
To, yeah.
All right, okay. Interesting thing, people... I guess need to know this. Doing a theater production has enormous financial challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things is that
this is James Richardson, folks.
Ticket sales don't cover like the cost. When we could sell out all of our shows, and we still won't cover the costs of A, running the company, or B, even the show. And we're especially. If it can be especially tricky for Odyssey because we're an outdoor theater company. So if we get a couple of years ago, we had, I think, about a third of our shows were rained out. So all of a sudden there's even more revenue potentially lost. But so we end up, you know, a lot of our money comes from grants that we get from all major levels of government. We also get, and we have to write major reports. It's like writing a thesis every time to get it. And then we also get a lot of private donations, and we're supported by a lot of wonderful foundations, private foundations
who like the arts
and see a value in some of our sort of special programs that we have. We do a lot of things to support youth and giving youth an opportunity to start in theater, and so we do things like that, and they see a lot of benefit in that.
So I would say I'm looking at the clock. We have to be out in a few seconds. So let's just go over it for people's emendation again. It's The Amorous Servant, it's at Strathcona Park,
right
around the corner from the Russian Embassy in Sandy Hill.
Yeah.
Every night at 8.
Every night at 8, Tuesday to Sunday night.
Tuesday, Sunday night, and an afternoon matinee on Sunday
at 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock.
Which is Pay What You Can.
Pay What You Can. Great group. We got James, who's a phenomenal guy. He's been with us so many years. And a new director on the scene, Attila Clement. And we hope that you continue to succeed.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Rabbi. Thank you.
Oh, great pleasure. Folks, have a wonderful week. The news is coming up in less than 3 minutes. Stay tuned.